There's nobody online right now.
Dan will be calling me.
Okay. And then I think Rebecca will be joining as well. So when they come in here, we'll maybe, I'll let you know and we'll do another sound check.
They'll let us know.
Right now, it's just that.
Okay, good morning. I'm gonna call our board meeting this morning to order. Looks like we have all of our commissioners here today. Everyone's present, which is wonderful. In terms of staff, they help for the traveling today. We have a good agenda. Victoria, would you mind introducing your staff that's present?
We have CEO Angela Cadillacy, Director of Facilities Ben Peck, Director of Operations Dylan Heberline, Director of Finance and Admin Sarah Mangy, myself, HR Manager Victoria Hightower, Finance Specialist Jennifer Croker, Finance Specialist Travis Portner, and Terminal Ops Manager Cameron Reese.
And actually, Dan just joined. So, Dan, can you hear us?
Good morning, Dan. Can you hear us online?
The host would like you to unmute your microphone. You can press star 6 to unmute. You are unmuted.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
Wonderful.
Can you hear me now?
Wonderful. Thank you. Let us all join for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Are there, we need to approve our agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda today?
No changes.
Okay, wonderful. Can we get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kennedy? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Commissioner, does anyone have anything they'd like to say or share today?
I have something, as you guys always have come to expect, I do.
Sarah Mangy, you would like to honor you today. I understand that you have had 5 years of service at the airport, and we have really appreciated your service and benefited from it. So I just want to honor you today. And before I give you this, I'd like to ask Angela, would you like to say anything?
I mean, I think Sarah's work speaks for herself. And then she took a quick break from the airport, and we all couldn't deny the value that she brings to the airport. And so we're so happy that you're here. Thanks for all you do. And we appreciate you very much.
Feeling surprised since I got Victoria last time. I didn't even think about it.
I'm impressed. Also, Victoria deserves all the credit. Getting the surprise. Well done.
I was focused on a few other items. So.
Came full circle. Wonderful. Are there any citizen comments today that are registered?
None today, I think.
Can you need a motion to approve consent agenda today?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Shearer. Second.
Second.
Commissioner Heidman, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. We have one really big action item today. Colin, we're so glad you're here in person to present this to us. Take it away.
So the first action is for, I need to read that, for the execution of United Companies award for schedules 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in the amount of $67,343,825. And so Jeremy showed this slide last month when I was out sick, and what it shows is really the payment sub-base package, which was underway, which we did a multi-year package in 2024, had a lot of success with that method. For those of you that maybe were not on the board at that time, for a long time we would just get little smatterings of money, and it was really hard to plan towards. And so we pulled up with the FAA, developed a process to be able to bid multiple years at a time, and then that allows us to match notice proceeds to bid award, funding award, and then make it all work. It's worked fantastic. It's helped us get lower bid prices, and really, I would also also say, better align those scopes of work with the funding we have and maximize that. It's really worked well. So we talked about this leading up to this meeting, but the next phase of that work is what's shown in cyan. It is the pavement surface work. That work is planned to be funded over 3 years. And so we opened bids last month and got favorable bids. They were around 10% less than the engineer's estimate, which is the savings we'd like to see. So this is broken up in basically schedules that align with our expected buckets of money, schedule 3, 4 plus 6, and 5 plus 7. So each one of these, that 27 million, the 22, and 16, those are all going to be issued under separate notice of proceeds. We'll talk about that in a minute. So while 67 million is a large amount, remind the group that there are opportunities for offering if such funding doesn't come through. So that's our safeguard to make sure that whatever we award today, there's other opportunities in the future to make decisions on if the funding doesn't show up for some unexpected reason. You would advance, please. So we went and met with the FAA last Monday, and the top table shows all the anticipated costs. So the contractor's cost is a portion of that, but there's also fees for both Garber and Eaton Hunt. There's FAA NAV aids. There's some other items that tell you there, $79,830,000. Underneath is our planned funding table. So we sat down with the FAA, made sure we were aligned on expectations of what's expected in the coming years. Also, we received $40 million last year, so we were off to a good start with that $79 million. But what you'll see is there's an expected essentially $10 million of discretionary money in 26, 27, and 28. And so if you'll advance, the big takeaway here, and I'll make you have to read all this too closely, is that the planned funding availability actually exceeds the anticipated cost. So barely, but it does. And I can see your face. It does. I mean, which, you know, that's better than, frankly, than we hoped. Like, we didn't expect that a week ago. We actually expected that to be the opposite. And so we got favorable bid prices. We were able to go huddle up with them. And I think we're in a really good position there.
Really quick before you advance, Colin. I think it's easy to, my eyes go across sometimes with these numbers. What's shown here is total dollars for the projects. So when we say the FAA funding availability, for simplicity on here, you see the grant funding combined with our match, because that's how you get the project totals. But, you know, as you know, we got an extra $38 million last year. That's 95% funded. That's how you get to the $40 million you see. But I just want to make sure, you know, when we get our grant funding this year, if we get, you know, the $10 million that's planned, you don't have this $12 million number in your mind and think, wait, I thought we needed $12 million. It's like, well, we're going to get $12 million, but it's with our money, too.
No, great distinction. You will advance. So here is really the timeline that we follow on this. So today we're asking for approval of the award for that work. So that authorizes the contract, authorizes us to issue notice of proceeds. Those notice to proceed by contract need to happen no later than July of 26 for Schedule 3, no later than October of 26 for Schedule 4 and 6, and no later than October 27 for Schedules 5 and 7. Part of the award language today is that the funding has to be in place before we can move forward with a notice to proceed, or we need to come back and talk to the board about it. I actually think there's a pretty good chance that at some point that happens. I mean, they're going to get their money in 26, 27, and right now it's shown in 28. So I think when we get a little further down the line, we'll likely get a little bit of extra money at some point along the way, but there's probably a partial payment that'll be in 28 that we need to fund this. So the timing may not work exactly right. So instead of us trying to project, which we've done currently, but instead of showing you that over and over again with bad information, I think it makes more sense to wait until we actually have real data. We can have a real conversation about where we're at and what's remaining. Also, I'd also leave you with these notice of proceeds are structured in a way where they're logical off-ramps in the project. questions, comments on that?
Thank you. Maybe this is a better question for Angela, but in the event that these funding don't come, or for some reason they're reduced, what's our buffer like? I guess the first question, did it fall to us to fill in the gap, and what's our buffer like to do that?
Yeah, so actually, can we go back to the schedule funding table, because I think it's easiest to see it there. Do you see the unused demobilization in the middle of the top section of $2 million?
Yes.
So what the team did in the contract is, for each notice to proceed, if we do not issue the notice to proceed by the date specified in the contract, we will pay them a $1 million demobilization fee. And so that's how we aren't on the hook for a $67 million contract when we only have, you know, $40 million in funding right now. And that $1 million demobilization fee is AIP eligible. We worked with the FAA. So even that, we would pay, you know, 5 or 10%, depending on which year it was, our match, so that the risk we're taking is a lot lower. And so when you start looking at that, you know, even if it's the 10% of a $1 million, that's $100,000. We believe that the savings and the efficiency gained by bidding this all out and having one contract far exceed $100,000. And so it's a risk worth taking. We don't expect to need to use that at all in our you know, they're at the table. They have funding in place too. You know, it gets, I mean, our eyes get crossed dealing with this as well, you know, when it comes to what's funded at the federal level, what's not. But, you know, they have appropriations right now. They have funding in place, and they have the FAA reauthorization tends to be what really stalls grants in our world. And that is a multi-year reauthorization. So we think we're in pretty good shape, and the likelihood is low. But that is our true risk exposure.
And do we have any, you know, any buffer money? I mean, say these just get delayed. So we're well into the project. We're 40, 52 million in to this 70 million. And do we have buffer that we can spend to get reimbursed on? Or can we get the state infrastructure bank for a loan? Or what?
Yeah, I mean, you are spot on. Like, you're just understanding this so fast. So that is probably the bigger and more real risk, is that if grant funding were to be, if it were to be delayed, or not even delayed, you know, if they're just not able to award in 2027 enough for to fully cover the notice to proceed that we have to issue in October, we could be floating that. So we have modeled that, and if that were to happen, we still don't think we would end up, from a burn rate perspective on that contract, we don't think we would end up floating anything, because by the time you start to run out of money on the grant that had been issued, the grant cycle would be gone again, and they can issue us a grant. But the FAA is hoping that they can avoid that situation. So, but this is kind of, this is almost worst case scenario plan. I mean, this is the plan, but they're hopeful that they'll be able to be more aggressive. But the cash flow risk is the real risk. And right. So when it comes to that right now, you know, we have enough in reserves to be able to weather that for a very long time anyway. And if not, the state has talked to us about SID loan funds potentially being available. And again, you know, these are contingency plans on contingency plans. And so for me, it makes me feel a lot better, because it makes me think, okay, even if we face a worst case scenario, we already have plans in place to deal with that. But I think the most likely scenario we could face is if we hadn't had all the grant awarded in 27, and then we get a springtime grant. And even then, we're not floating anything cash flow wise, but, you know, we do have enough cash reserves to float it even to the end of that fiscal year. Great. It's a good question.
Thank you.
Do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, that was part of our conversation with the FAA when we went and met their office, was just talking about different scenarios. I mean, one nuance that about what Angela's talking about is the money that we get is really into two categories, entitlement and discretionary. Entitlement can be reimbursed. Like, we could build the rest of this if we wanted to, and then reimburse it over 6 or 8 years, which we wouldn't want to do that. Discretionary is a little more challenging. If you spent the money, it's technically not able to be reimbursed without a waiver. And so we talked about a waiver. We talked about grant timing. I think Angela mentioned potentially getting that grant earlier in the year in 28 instead of late in the year, so we haven't spent that money. And so earlier, I was kind of brushed over it, but prior see any of those notice proceeds in that situation. I think it warrants a pretty in-depth discussion about what we've done so far, what the burn rate is, what it looks like is in front of us, if there's risk there, and reimbursement risk. I think we just need to talk about all that.
And what is the time frame on the actual grant money showing up for us? Are we just strictly reimbursed, or we get proceed as milestones, or how does it kind of work?
It's a reimbursement program, and so once it's awarded, we can file to be reimbursed from that program. They don't pre-fund projects. I think there technically are tools available for that, but they come at a pretty hefty cost because they can't match a size if they do that.
And how quick are the reimbursements?
Very fast.
So there is a little bit of float that we need just to pay and then request a reimbursement.
Right, and that's why that liquidity, you know, the value of the liquidity is so high right now. But I mean, our burn rate, Sarah, has been what, about $1.5 to $2 million a month on the construction that's been going on. And how, I mean, from when you file for reimbursement to the cash in the bank, about how long is that?
I'd say I'm looking at Jennifer. I'd say the majority of them are within a week or two. There are times that our planner is on vacation, or they do have certain periods of time where it's like the funds are locked the last month of the year. Like there are certain times when some of that goes further. But for the most part, our internal process is as we process all of those contractor reimbursements, Jennifer turns around right after those payments go out the door and is submitting to that grant request. So we're talking about typically a 2 week period. On average, I would say sometimes it's longer if we're longer or if they're longer, but it's pretty typical. And we have talked about, I think as the burn rate gets larger, because as Jeremy has said, this is a lower amount than you will see as these projects start, we really may want to explore getting a line of credit or something else. We do have quite a bit of liquidity right now, but having the ability to draw on those should we need it, I think is something we really don't need probably over the next year and a half, but maybe beyond that point as we get towards the last phase is something we do want to explore. So.
That's on there.
That's time to ask for all the liquidity.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. Sarah and I are not bankers, but we've hung out with them enough where we recognize that the time to ask for it is while we have high cash balances. So that is on Sarah's when I'm done with the audit list, when I'm done with the 2025 financial audit list of things to explore. And it's something we talked to the FAA about, and they understand and recognize too. Because the reimbursement cycles look different, you know, like the NAB aids, for example, that operates in a very different way. And, you know, we end up floating money in for longer periods typically on that than we do on some of the others. And so they recognize, our partners with the FAA, the ask based on the structure. And so they want to minimize that as well. But right now, you know, we've modeled out a lot of different scenarios. And even in the very worst ones that we think are highly unlikely, we are still in good shape. And so we feel good about it.
So the two bids came in very different. Did you anticipate additional bids on this project, or is that kind of normal?
It's pretty normal. I mean, I think in this particular market, there's only you companies that control materials that can supply a job like this. And both out of the
Any other questions?
Is there an escalation agreement clause in this versus a hard
bid? It's a hard bid.
Yeah. Even if it takes an extra 2 or 3 years?
And so we would not keep them. That is not an option. We have to give them, at those notice proceed milestones, it's a thumbs up or thumbs down. Okay. Yeah. But yes, their bids are until that happens.
And specifically, there's not a fuel escalator.
Yeah.
I mean, that's typically what comes up. That is prohibited on these FAA funded contracts. And so, you know, this bid came in below the engineering estimate. We were pretty happy with that since the bids came in about 10 days after we invaded it on. So you're a little nervous. Jeremy is more than a little nervous.
Thanks for the good questions.
Last thing here is when we're done with this, so early 29, so we're opening the runway in 28, but when everything's done with this package, what's green is the pavement that's open. So I think that's worth just showing everyone, just so you can kind of start envisioning. You'll see it more as we work through it a little more closely. over the next couple of years, but high level. I want to share that with you.
More, you know, and I think what I want to make sure is very clear to the board is, you know, when you look out, you see all these connector taxiways, right? Connecting our main taxiway to the runway. That's what they're called, is connector taxiways. And when we open, we won't have all of those built yet. So the ones that are grayed out, those will be built in the future phase.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it's important to recognize that there still will be construction going on.
Yeah, well, it'll be such a huge milestone to get the new runway open, bridge over. But, you know, the two, kind of, there's really three major things that need to happen after that. The existing 1129 needs to be narrowed to taxiway width, which is half of what it is. We need to open the additional connectors, and we need to build the permanent run-up pad. So as you guys know, we built the temporary aircraft engine run-up pad. So that we could still have that amenity, which is really important when, from a safety perspective, when aircraft are doing full engine run-ups. That presents a safety challenge in the airfield. That will move up to the northeast side of the airfield, so it'll be north of the runway, and that's a pretty common location for that. So this is a temporary run-up pad. That's where, on our master plan, you know, air cargo and large aircraft maintenance goes, is where we have the temporary pad. But just want to make sure, since we're finally getting close enough to the runway opening where it's, you know, within, you know, clear windshield view, want to make sure you know there's still big milestones and what that runway opening really means and looks like. Airfields will still work well, but it's not, you're not going to be able to get off the runway right away. In a lot of areas like you are now, because there's fewer connectors when they open.
This today represents a really big milestone in this project. I think since I've been on this board, and since 2019, this will be the largest project that the board has approved in dollar amount.
I think it probably is the largest project. I don't know how much the terminal construction was in 82, but money went a lot further than.
Yeah, amen to that. Okay, if there are no further questions, may I get a motion to to authorize the CEO to sign? I'm not going to read it all. I'm going to let you guys do this.
I don't think you have to read the full one because it's not a resolution.
It is not a resolution.
But I do have it presented up there on the screen. So.
Thank you very much. Can I get a motion?
So you're saying I'm willing to make a motion. You're saying you don't need the full
one? You don't need to read the full one on this one. This is not a resolution, unless Dan's going to correct me. But you'll have to read the next one. So
maybe read the schedules on the dollar amount for us.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and just get it. I move that we authorize the Chief Executive Officer to sign the Notice of Award for Construction Schedules 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 to Old Castle's SW or Southwest Group, Inc., via United Companies, and signed the construction contract in the amount of $67,343,825.60 for the pavement and transition construction associated with runway 1230 replacement program, and signed notices to proceed consistent with the approved AIP grant funding from the FAA.
Well done. Make it a second.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Congratulations. Let's get to work. Congratulations to United Companies, too.
Yeah.
How did it continue that work?
Yeah, well, thank you to being part of the bid project.
Yeah.
Well, that was a hefty one.
Yeah.
And I tried to give Jeremy a headache.
Under our expectations. Well done. All right. Next, we do have a resolution.
We do. And I'm just going to present on this one really quick. So as you guys may remember, CDOT is generous enough to offer up to $250,000 a year towards the airport match on our FAA AIP project. So this grant, the $324,000, that additional amount is, they are also still continuing to match for those BIL or AIG funds. The name has changed a little bit, but we did apply for that project with the FAA for the terminal amenities. It's kind of what we've been calling it for some new facility improvements here, and they've also offered to match that portion as well. So it's the 250 normal AIP match plus about $74,000 towards that match. And that'll be up to, typically they'll do up to 5% of a project or half of our match. As you can see from that large contract, we're well in excess of that. But we're really excited that the state is being able to do the programs right now. So.
Any questions? All right, may I get a motion of the resolution? So we do need to read it in full, and then I think it's roll call if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
A motion to adopt resolution 2026-005, authorizing the authority to request grant assistance from Colorado Aeronautical Board and the Division of Aeronautics in the amount of $324,842 in conjunction with approved federal project applications and authorizing the chief executive officer to sign grant 26-003-01.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. Second.
Second.
Commissioner West. Can I ask you guys for your aye vote in favor? Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Kreiman?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Commissioner Shear?
Yes.
Commissioner Myers?
Yes.
And the chair votes in favor as well. The motion carries. Thank you, guys. Let's head right into staff reports. Great, Ms. Angela.
I know. Has it been 21 consecutive days?
Oh, right. April 1st, it was inspected and released last year.
It's fitting that it would be April 1st.
So, you know, he's adding in those clarifications because it was fixed for a long time before that, but we were not allowed to open it because the state said they had to inspect it before we could open it, and they were like 6 weeks booked out. And so for the last 6 weeks of the closure, we just got to look at a closed escalator, excuse me, and knowing that it worked. But
great job, Ben.
Sorry it took a year.
Peace out.
Actually, I took him going on vacation. We opened it while he was gone. Okay, next slide. My report is heavily focused on air service, and then, you know, I do have a few other things I want to cover. Actually, I think I'm going to change my order and just go out of, I'll end with air service because I think it feeds into the finance report better. So we'll go pretty quickly. The Western Colorado Economic Summit is this week. We will be exhibiting there and having a table. I think some of you are planning to attend and some of you are planning to sit with us. Thank you, we're excited about this opportunity. Our ARC truck is here, it's been delivered, and we have the christening next week. So you all are welcome to join. Hopefully you have those details. If ever you have questions about anything going on at the airport, I think Victoria is your best first point of contact. And then she can, me too, but Victoria usually knows better than I do the details to be blunt. But we'd love to have you join us for that as well. And then the next week we have our triennial emergency exercise. So Dylan's talked about this during his last couple of reports, but we would love to have any of you join us if you'd like to. I think it's a really cool, fun event. So, the ASC for, sorry, I should speak in words. So the Aspen Airport is getting ready to close on Thursday for their 4-week closure this year. So we do expect an uptick in passenger traffic during that time. As we've seen in years past, they typically have a multi-week closure around this time of year. Want the board to know we're ready for that. You know, Ben's team's been doing a good job in the parking lot, making sure that things are as clear and clean as possible, that spaces are as open as they can be. Obviously, there's an instruction zone out there, but we recognize that there'll be an uptick in passengers who are less familiar with the airport, too, so just know that we're ready for that. I spoke with Tommy Hayes about BLM last week. They're, as you guys know, they're working on a new air tanker building. That project is going well. Right now, they expect that building to open in July, and so they'll be operating in kind of an interim situation. They have the buildings over there in place and plans in place for how they'll operate while that building is finishing up, but they expect their season to really ramp up in May. They do have people contracted, teams contracted in case anything pops up earlier, where they have to, you know, respond within 24 hours to provide those services, but their contracts really start mid-May, so that's when you start to see more activity down there. Hopefully that could be down there, not them leaving the airport, but their construction's going well. Similarly, Westar remains on track. They expect their building to open right around October 1st. So they're planning, both parties are planning ribbon cutting ceremonies. We'll make sure you're invited to all of those for those details. Are still a little too far out, but they're very excited about that. Should be just in time for the air show. It looks like all of that is kind of coming together during the same week, so they might use the air show as part of the grand opening. And then last, we are on track for the state infrastructure bank loan application we approved last meeting. That right now is on track to go before the Colorado Aeronautical Board in early June, and so that timeline is looking good. The CDOT team, is working on getting funds transferred over from the highway fund into the aeronautics fund, since the project is, a roadway parking lot project. Just want you to know. Any questions on that before I get into air show? Things are looking very good from an air service perspective. First and second quarters have record capacity, so we have the most seats scheduled into our market that we've ever had in a first or second quarter period. I know the font is small, so what you see is by year, the first three quarters of the year. And so you can see that for 2026, things look exceptionally strong. What I like to see is, 2021 was a super funky year at the airport, and that summer, that Q3 period was the funkiest of all. And when you look, our capacity for the third quarter this year is about the same as it was in 2021. And that was a milestone that just felt really far out there. So we're excited. Fourth quarter continues to look strong, but those numbers, there's a reason we don't show numbers that far out. Who knows what will happen in the fourth quarter. Right now, they're still looking really strong. I'm going to talk about what we know is true first, and then I'll get into kind of airline sentiments and kind of the elephant in aviation right now when it comes to oil prices. So TSA volumes continue to be very strong. So again, this is the number of people passing through the security screening checkpoints that includes employees. It's not just passengers, but when you look over time, it's a really good indicator, and the data is available fast. So that blue line at the top is 2026, and you can see that we are having a very, very strong year. And I am extra happy with that because we were up similar numbers last year, and so to see double digit growth on double digit growth, that's how you get to, compared to 2024. Our volumes are 24% higher than they were this time last that year. So very strong growth. Next slide. Just kind of going through by airline. American is growing. We see 3 daily flights now on American through the end of the summer, starting in August. August is a pretty weak month for their Phoenix hub, and so we see them scale down Phoenix a little bit. And then in the fall, we see American ramping up to 4 daily flights to DFW. I think I say this every year, but I will just keep saying it. It's a real bright spot. GDT is a real bright spot for the airlines in the fall because that's considered the shoulder season for travel, and it's our peak. And so it offers these unique opportunities for us that see even more capacity in the market. Breeze is up. They continue to have 5 weekly flights, so they have 2 non-stop flights each week that go to the Orange County Airport. And then they have 3 flights to Vegas. But the way they're routing Vegas now is they're actually routing it from their base in Orange County. And so the airplane goes Orange County, Vegas, Grand Junction, Vegas, Orange County. So what that means is for our travelers here, they can fly on those flights and just stop in Vegas, but continue on to Orange County. They call it a breeze through. And so you actually have 5 times weekly service Orange County. And that's what they're showing through the end of the year, which is phenomenal. For travelers, that's a breeze through. They always offer breeze throughs wherever the plane is based from. It used to be the Vegas flight was Hartford, Connecticut based. And so you could have a breeze through. You go to Vegas to go to Hartford, Connecticut. And we did see a few people do that, but not very many. Similarly, Orange County is Provo. Don't see a lot of people, routing that way. But this one makes a lot of sense. It's probably the fastest way to go to Orange County. And again, it's a way that you can fly Breeze round trip and have much more flexibility on the days we travel.
How does a consumer identify a Breeze through flights?
That's a good question. So when you go to the website, the Breeze website to book, if you click Grand Junction as the airport you're leaving from, you're going to Orange County, it shows you a calendar and it shows all the days they have service. And so it really encourages that. Okay. So you have to look to see, oh, that one's actually Breeze, so that's why that flight is longer. Okay. And real geek little factoid, people use nonstop and direct interchangeably, those terms, but nonstop means you didn't stop, whereas we have 3 times weekly direct service to Orange County. It means that you stay on the main line. So, trivia for you. Future on Jeopardy someday. The Breeze service, I think it's a real bright spot. It represents service that was new. It started a couple of years ago. We've seen it mature, and the numbers are looking strong, and they're happy with the performance. So we're really excited about that. We also are the only airport with ultra-low-cost carrier service in the region. So Breeze has offered, for 2 years in a row, they've offered winter ski season service out of Montrose, but those flights are no longer in the schedule. For this coming up ski season. Now there's still time, they could be added back, but they've actually been removed from the schedule. And so I just think it's an important role we play in the region as the airport that consistently has ultra low cost carrier service and that affordable option for travelers. We're really excited about that. United continues to grow, so they're up 15% in the second quarter and 14% in the third. That's primarily driven by the fact that they're adding that 7th daily flight at the end of April. I'll talk more about that. The time of day, I like to know kind of how that schedule looks compared to how it was looking. So they're adding that extra frequency. They're continuing to use larger aircraft when it comes to the 50-seat jets. They're using fewer CRJ-200s and more of the CRJ-550s. Has anyone been on a CRJ-550? You can tell because it has a closet for your bags, like the only aircraft. So it's a CRJ-700 frame, and they removed some of the seats that only have 50 seats, so there's a lot of space. And one of the big complaints about CRJs is that they have tiny overhead bins. You have to gate check with that green tag your bag. And the 550s, which is what Delta flies and out of our market, and then there's some United flights as well, they have much more legroom, and then they have basically their closets for your bags. So even though the number of seats is the same, 50 seats on a CRJ-200, 50 seats on a CRJ-550, we've heard some praise from travelers on the CRJ-550 and how we're really excited when it's that 50-seat jet, not the lower one, but. Moving on to Delta. Delta is the one that, this is not the same bright spot. They pulled back capacity during the weakest winter months, January and February. So they had 1 daily. They're back to the 12 times weekly flights, so 2 days or 2 flights per day, except Tuesdays and Saturdays. But their service is just not performing at the same level as the other airlines. Can you actually click the next slide? I have a slide on this. So I wanted to just show the load factors, because what we want to see is we want to see service mature over time. And that's not necessarily what we're seeing right now. So when we look at Delta, can you take
these? Yeah, Delta 2025 is the brown, and 2026 is the
black. Yeah, and so you see in January and February, because Delta pulled back the capacity, the load factors were a little bit higher in January and February. But then in March, we actually, when they added the second daily flight back, we see load factors drop below their load factors last year, and that was 4 months into the service. So, this is something we're watching closely. The service was, we worked hard to get back. It's really a really important benefit to the community, but it is not performing at the same level as the other airlines. So this is just looking at load factors. Load factors are not a perfect proxy for profitability with airlines, but it's something really simple you can look at that, is public facing and everyone can understand, how many seats are there and what percentage of those seats have a person in them.
Is that market driven? Because it looks like United and American are doing something similar.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that, because it's driven by the influx of capacity. So we saw a 20% uptick in capacity in March, so just more seats. And so the load factors stayed healthy for those other airlines. you know, they went down a little bit, but staying around 80%, I mean, that's a very healthy load factor. The problem with Delta is they're not operating at a great load factor to start, and then dipping into the low 60s in March, you know, that is not a healthy position. And so, you know, that's something we're watching closely, and, you know, we don't know exactly why, but we would really love to see that service, the performance improve. So that's something we'll be reporting out to the board on more specifically.
Angela, on Delta, is there a factor related to whether Salt Lake City Airport is really going to places people want to go? I mean, you've got to change planes there.
For sure. The hub matters, and I think that's a good point. So when we talk about the hubs we're connected into, I think Salt Lake City is comparable to Phoenix. So those are Western hubs. They serve Western destinations. Whereas both Denver and Dallas, those are kind of 360-degree hubs where they have a lot of flights going in both directions, so right in the middle of the country. So that is part of it. Presumably is just options, but that hub is growing a lot for Delta right now. So, yeah, I mean, I think some of it is, we know that time channel options matter to consumers. And when you only have 1 to 2 daily flights, you know, you just have more limited opportunities on what time of day you get places. And, you know, you look at 1 to 2 daily flights versus 6 flights to Denver versus 3 to Dallas, 3 to Phoenix. Because with American, you know, you might fly through one hub going there and one hub coming back, then sometimes depending on where you're going. So that's my best.
It's interesting that Breeze is going west and they're successfully growing, but Delta going west through Salt Lake City were challenged. And I'm surprised to hear that you say that Salt Lake City hub is really growing, because I would have thought, well, you know, maybe that Salt Lake City hub is just kind of stagnant, but it's not. And there is some kind of, I don't know what it is, some issue that we, or they need to identify.
Yeah, well, and I mean, yeah, there's a whole list of reasons it could be, right? Yeah. Presumably, it's due to a list of reasons, but people do tend to be fairly loyal to airlines, and so, you know, the airline with the fewest options doesn't always perform the best in the market, mm-hmm. but we would really love to see this performance turn around. So just wanted the board to know that this is something we're going to be reporting on more specifically. I know it might feel like it's in the weeds, but we want you to know how the service is going. Okay. Any questions on that before I get into schedules for this spring and summer?
Quick question, just kind of going back, as we talked about the substantial growth, right? I think the 24% growth the last few years is pretty exciting. What I'm worried about is, as we talk about our runway expansion, terminal expansion, is if we're going to be able to keep up. Because the experience right now, I've been flying a lot more recently, is great. Coming in here, parking, experience in the terminal, everything is very smooth. But I'm wondering if, looking at this from your perspective, if you think we'll be able to keep up, if we'll be able to still be providing that experience for customers as we're growing so quickly, and if we're going to be able to grow into, like, we'll meet that extended capacity as we, you know, get a runway online, terminal, all that is going to match up. Just
I want to make sure I understand clearly. So, you know, your question is our level of confidence that our facilities are going to be able to keep up with this level of growth. Exactly. And that's where, you know, I think we're in yellow territory when it comes to that. And that's why we're so focused on figuring out the funding path to expand the terminal, because I think the big problem is going to be square footage in the boarding area, because there's something bigger. And so we want to get that bumped out and really decomposing the flow of traffic on the second level and come out of the secure area and then up to the security checkpoint. So I'm still feeling confident that, you know, things will be in good shape. And when we talk about the Aspen closure next year, I think that's where we could go through a more painful period as we see an uptick, a prolonged uptick in traffic as we absorb some of those passengers. I think it creates an opportunity for us, but it also, I mean, I do think that it is going to make things busier. And for our local travelers, you know, things might feel tighter than they usually do. But I'm not worried yet that we're facing a big problem. You know, we look at airports nearby, and those Sears Resort airports,
they have to pull passengers at the checkpoint and only let passengers on certain ticketed flights through because they hit those in their basket in their secure area. That to me is, that is not yellow, that is red. Like you need more space. And I mean, they've been expanding and we've seen a lot of projects in the area, but that to me, I don't think we're at risk of that right now. And that's what I want to make sure we avoid. But do I think things could feel tighter in the boarding area as we get closer and closer to that terminal expansion? Yes, especially the fast one. And then parking, I mean, we, as you know, and just to rebound the set agenda, you know, we are doing our best to stay ahead of the need to have additional parking and to continue to let those parking lots swell in a way that we can meet passenger needs, even just during those peaks, which is philosophically a difference from a lot of other airports, but we feel like in our market, with our guests, and based on our mission, vision, and values, that's the right thing to do. So I'm not nervous about this one. Any other questions? Okay. I will talk about schedule. So we look at April right now. Oh, sorry, I want to talk about the United schedule. That's the first one. So what you see here on the left is this is the United schedule, and this is roughly the flight times every day, but we just pulled a random day. So Friday, April 10th. This is the departures from then and the arrivals at GDOT. This is what they look like. And I wanted to go in this order because it's really easy to see the seventh flight they added. So what they added is they added a 7:45 a.m. departure from Denver. So if you're Colin or Brad, and you live in Denver, and you need to come for a board meeting, hypothetically, you have to decide if you're going to come in the night before, or if you're going to roll the dice with a flight that is scheduled to arrive at 10:49. So, am I right?
Yeah.
I think all of our businesses are people who decide what they're going to do. Are they going to roll the dice, or are they going to come the night before? So for those day trippers from Denver, I think, well, and frankly, not just day trippers, for people connecting, coming from the Denver airport, including people connecting to the Denver airport, they will be able to get into Grand Junction by 9 a.m., which is something that, you know, we have not had, and I think this is a huge enhancement. So they're adding this flight that departs then at 7:45 a.m., gets here at 9, and Sarah, will you switch to the next slide? Sorry. And then it will depart here at 9:30 a.m., and get there about 11. So I just think this view, it enables you to see really clearly where that seventh flight is. They didn't shuffle the deck. They didn't move any of our flights around, really. They just added in this extra flight coming from their first morning bank, that same bank, that it's the same bank that we're connecting into with that 5:30 a.m. departure from Grand Junction. It's that bank coming back to Grand Junction in the morning. So we're really excited about this. But for day trippers coming to Grand Junction, and we know that it's, you know, we go there more often than people come here, right? It'll make it a lot easier for them to come here for a day trip. So. All right, next slide. And this is that regional view. I won't spend a ton of time on this, but just looking at what April looks like in the region, you can see that our average daily departures is almost the highest in the region. Aspen's higher than ours, and their numbers are weird because it doesn't include a whole month. So, you know, we're at just over 14 flights on average per day. We're the only, we have six daily flights. You know, Eagle has, six airlines. Where's their heart? We have six nonstop routes, and Eagle has, they show 12, but really most of those are just the winter flights leading into April. So many of those flights are only one in April. But you can see the ski season kind of coming to a close in April. And as we look ahead to June, we're really happy with the strong position we're in. So we are the only airport in Western Colorado, Eastern Utah, with four airlines for the summer. So obviously we have American, Delta, United, and Breeze. No one else has all of those. We also are the only airport in this region with service to Phoenix. You see Canyonlands having some contour service into Phoenix, but that service is very small. When you look at the larger commercial airports, we're the only ones with nonstop service to Phoenix until you get to Durango. We have an average of 15 flights per day this summer, which is the highest in the region outside of Aspen.
But then when you look at the seat counts are much closer. Aspen obviously only has E-175s and CRJ-700s coming in and out, whereas we have a wider variety of aircraft. But what we're most excited about is that we still have double-digit growth in our seat capacity. So again, just that supply that passengers have access to, which is puts us in a very, very strong position. You know, you see some big double-digit numbers up there. Durango is just killing it right now, and we're so excited for them. That's not an airport that we worry about our passengers leaking to. We're excited to see them having so much service. You look at Gunnison, you know, they have huge growth in percentage, but they only have 3.7 flights. So some of these airports, you see big number, big percentage numbers because the flight numbers are little. So every change is double digits. But just overall, we're in a really favorable position. We're the only airport with service to Salt Lake City on this list, which we think is a really important market and allows us to serve a really wide region.
Angela, I see so much Houston on here, and we're not.
Right.
Can you, well, can somebody that has a giant hub in Houston that already serves here greatly? Yeah.
So, you know, we would love to see nonstop service to Houston. That's something that we've been talking about for a long time. And with the energy markets the way they are, that helps bolster that argument. One thing I will say is, you know, we look at the nonstop routes. I do think it's important to point out that, you know, even if that is served weekly, it still shows up here. So it's not, it's less than daily service at many of those airports. I mean, for example, the LAX service in Montrose, I mean, that's weekly service for the summer. So we're talking about 10 or 15 flights in total. But yeah, I mean, I think Houston represents one of the top markets we would love to see service added to. We don't have it yet. It's one that we're always working on, but we're really hopeful about that one. There are airlines with large hubs there.
Yeah.
We think there's opportunity. Yeah.
Affordable.
Yeah.
Well, this is the,
so, yeah. So we're on the same page that we think there's a lot of opportunity there. Last, as I promised, wanted to just touch on the sustained high fuel prices that airlines are facing. You know, airlines used to hedge fuel, heavily hedge fuel, and most airlines don't really hedge fuel anymore. Hedging is expensive, and so it is hitting them harder than I think most people would expect because, you know, they it's a huge expense for them, and they don't have a lot of protections in place. I have a few quotes. It's the investor calls for all the airlines are going on. I mean, Alaska was this morning. And so you're able to hear from those CEOs about what impact it's having. You know, investor briefing on April 8th, this one really stuck out to me because I think it puts in perspective the scale. The Delta CEO said that their profit in Q2 2025, so the second quarter of 2025, was $2.1 billion. And they expect that the heightened fuel prices are going to cost them $2 billion in the second quarter of this year. So if you think about the impact that has, we're talking about like the whole profit margin on an airline. And so we're watching the situation closely. You know, there's a lot of talk about airline mergers and things, including Scott Kirby kind of hilariously saying that maybe United will merge with American and forcing American to respond that no, there are no talks of that. I joke that it's like Greenland, like we just talk about Greenland, and you know, it feels like that, kind of just these, there's just a lot going on publicly with those CEOs, which is fun to watch and fascinating. But what it really, the heightened fuel prices though are starting to really show up in pullback when it comes to capacity growth. Delta has pulled back all of their capacity growth for the year, and then yesterday announced several route cancellations. We're not one of them. But there's just a lot going on, and it's the industry will likely get smaller if this environment remains because it's just unsustainable. Quint, your face says you have a lot of thoughts.
Oh, no, I think I was looking at the average, as you were talking, I was looking at the average fuel prices. They've been here before.
Yeah, they've been here before. It's been a long time since they've dealt with this problem, mm-hmm. you know? I think about it and just knowing a lot of folks at airline headquarters, and I just think about how many of the people who work in airline headquarters who have never worked through a high oil price environment, except like the pandemic kind of doesn't count because it was just so chaotic. But otherwise, like it's a normal problem that hasn't popped up in a long time, and so it's just it's interesting to watch the industry.
They were headed there before the pandemic, and then the pandemic created a lot of fuel.
Yeah. And so they didn't have. But anyway, just want you guys to know that this is something we watch closely. We listen to the earnings calls. We want to know, again, our primary air service strategy is identifying those areas where airline strategies and opportunity in our market align, because we think that is the no-brain. Like, just don't overthink it. This is what makes sense to do, and so we want to know what they're thinking.
I was talking to a large travel agent. Gal represents a large travel agent. She said that a lot of people are canceling overseas travel for U.S. travel, local travel.
I think that's a good point. Is, you know, we do see in the international travel numbers into and out of the U.S. are way down. I mean, I think Canadian U.S. travel is down almost 40%, and people will substitute away. And I mean, that's largely what happened in the pandemic when it came to some of the big mountain resorts here. People substitute away from European travel into these markets. So we'll see what impact it has. I don't have news to report other than we're watching it closely, and we'll keep you posted on what we know.
Okay, really helpful report. Any other questions? I appreciate having time to just go over these things in depth and just take Q&A from the board. So thanks for cutting that out. Our finance report, Sarah Mangy.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have kind of our favorite employment slide comparison to budget and year over year, and it is now the 39th consecutive month in March that we have grown year over year in the same month. Just such a cool stat. In first quarter, our employment, we did have a fairly conservative budget. We had that double digit growth last year that we were a little bit worried about being able to sustain, but we're 10% above budget again for the first quarter in those employment numbers. And I think that question of load factor came up earlier, and I don't typically report on capacity, but I did also want to show this capacity on this slide, because you see the solid line at the top, that's the load factor for 2026, and you do see that dip as we look at the airport as a whole, but the fact that it only went down that much when you see that humongous capacity growth, so the 20% increase, and I did put it into seats just for perspective, 6,800 seats. And all of the airlines except Delta grew or exceeded that budget that we had in there. So that was the growth over that budget that we had for March, just with that performance. So that's really that load factor impact, but I was surprised it wasn't more, because when you flood the market with seats, they don't just always get cold. So pretty excited on that. So it was a good segue for me, Cody, to ask that question. And how that translates into our financials. Really, as you look at the top, and I'm sorry this is so small, I'm trying to fit all of the operating activity on one slide so it's a little bit easier to see, but the top line passenger landing fees, we were about that 10% ahead when we look at the capacity and the landed weight compared to what we budgeted, and that's reflecting right in the dollars, as well as those passenger revenues. The red and the decrease in the revenue there from fuel tax and fuel flowage fees, really that's more noise than timing. The state has announced some delays in funding the fuel tax, and as we know, fuel tax is both the amount sold as well as the prices, so we do anticipate that that will recover. It's just a little bit noisy with timing, and it's much more unpredictable. And then fuel flowage fees is really more driven by the operations and military. We tried to adjust that a little bit seasonally on our month over month, but with only being 2 months in, again, not concerned about that. It's just a little bit harder to predict because that is a little bit less static than some of our other activities. So revenues up about 63,004%. Operating expenses are over budget currently. That's driven almost entirely in that repairs and maintenance category. We had a couple of big projects in first quarter, but we did budget that on a straight line basis, not being really sure when those are completed. But you know, with the GIF in the beginning, getting that escalator open was a big push for us. We obviously wanted to get that done. So that's not concerned for the year as a whole at this point, but just some front loading of a few of those projects and repairs that came up. So, and I will as we complete first quarter, we did talk about trying to get December for you guys at this meeting. We're still working through some year-end close items. We have our audit coming up here in a couple of weeks, so pushing hard for that. We didn't get that December in for you guys, but I will get that for you. And then as we get through a whole quarter, we'll go ahead and add the non-operating activity in so you can see that as well. But as you know, again, the project is just so noisy on a month-over-month basis. We've tried to just include in your package that more predictable operating line, because the budgets for the non-operating are, you know, frankly, they're just difficult to predict on a monthly basis. So we will get that full packet. And if you guys have questions, please feel free to reach out to me, or if you have them now, I can take them as well.
Questions?
And for finance committee members, we will be sending out a poll for attendance for a preliminary preview for the audit report from the auditors, as well as I believe we're targeting June for that final approval, but I'll get those details out to the principal so you guys know. That's all I have. Over to Colin.
Hi. Hi again. A few more items, as you guys are all well aware, there's a ton going on, so I wanted to run through each one of those really quickly and just give an update. So we talked about the runway already, but upcoming board actions, really three things. The first is next month we plan to bring Mead and Hunt CA and Garber's program management services to you for consideration. Two and three, the wording, I could have done a better job on that. My intention there was two was meant just normal grant acceptance for 2026 grants. So sometime between likely June and September, we'll receive grant offers for multiple grants related to the runway program. And that's our opportunity to accept those. And then we're also, as always, hoping on end-of-year funds. That's what was intended by Bullet 3, and that happens in September. So really, three things related to the runway to keep your eyes on. Next, parking expansion. This was approved. The design was approved on a consent agenda. We plan on beginning the design with the area shown in blue, the dark, almost blackish color, what was recently built, the white is just a future planning. To hold space for it and make sure that we give that room for the future. The area is shown in blue, which is what we're going to build. It adds about a little bit less than 350 spaces. We are talking about designing that lot in a way where we can segment a portion of that off the employee parking if we want, and so we can kind of right size that. So we would pick, you know, approximately half early on, make that employee lot, move that away from this area over here, that area, along that line. And we would have that set up for when the terminal improvements happen in the future. We've got an opportunity to move employees. So short term, it should be Aspen overflow parking. Midterm, it could be when the terminal innovation happens. It gives capacity for employees, and long term, it places back. It's just regular customer parking again. So trying to think long term about this lot.
I mean, this isn't a lot that we think, based on our passenger traffic, we need very soon. But with the Aspen closure, we do think that that is going to put, we'll see an uptick in demand for parking. And then we talk about our terminal expansion, just some of the construction staging and access. You know, we think either on a temporary basis or potentially even on a permanent basis, we'll need an alternative place for terminal employees, so not really airport authority employees, but employees who work in the terminal, for them to park. And so, you know, we looked at a lot of different options, but we really felt like this offered us the most flexibility. And then when it comes to this parking lot also, you know, we're looking at whether it should be paved, you know, if we could save a lot of money, maybe it should be gravel, but really just looking what makes the most sense from that perspective as well. And we wanted to get this design work done so that we're ready to build it if Aspen does, you know, as we get closer, if Aspen remains on track to close for that prolonged period next year, we want to build it. If they don't close as planned, we don't know if we want to build this quite as quickly. And so we're trying to invest in the smartest possible way so that we are nimble. We can make sure we're continuing to meet passenger and guest needs, Cody, like you were alluding to, but that we're also not building a parking lot that just sits empty.
Yeah. Notice an exit on the H road and more plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Good. Yes, that would be nice.
Yeah, well, and this is illustrative. So if anyone from city planning talk to you, Cody. Just know that we are working with them on this. This is not final. This is
well, because that was honestly my, as soon as somebody said APATRO, I was like, okay, can I mail the conversation?
No, yeah.
We actually had started that conversation almost a year ago now, so
yeah.
They know that we do have a plan to do that. I mean, we obviously need to continue that conversation, but.
Well, you know, all of like,
yeah. No, I feel good. They've
well, and you know, frankly, a big reason why we didn't build that access from ATRO for the black parking lot you see is because we recognize that that's a bigger ask from city planning,
yeah.
And just takes them more time to look at. So,
yeah.
Without them represent two access from a parking lot or three.
Two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Be two. But this does, and we're going to set it up as such so that at some point in the future, if we want segregate those parking products, we can do that as well. So that's all the intention. When that time makes sense.
The purpose is to increase redundancy, not, you know, create a new single point of failure. So we still expect, even if we're able to separate products and things like that, but it'll still be a nested lot where if you come in through the entrance that exists today, you can still end up getting into this more economy lot. But if you don't need to go through the whole parking lot and on Walkerville Drive, why would we want you to do that? Or heaven forbid there was some road closure and you couldn't get through. It's just, I think it'll bring us a lot of comfort if we have that second point of access. And so we expect there'll be an entrance and an exit there.
I think we'll say, I don't think we have an individual slide on this, but we are also working on an exterior signage package that we've talked about that will also help with all of these plan changes to kind of redirect that that passenger flow as well.
Right, so. And the parking management contract we talked about, you know, that procurement is live right now. So, you know, all of this is coming together. We're just right in the middle of the year, you know, working through it. But we expect we'll have new equipment, new signage, and new parking lot amenities open around the time.
Thank you.
Good
solar parking. These are some pictures from the paving. It's underway. No update other than it's still on track to be open in August of 2026. So it's going to be look a lot different next board meeting and the one after that too. There's a lot happening.
Yeah, the structure arrived this week, so you're going to start to physically see a lot more construction.
Quick question on that. I get there's a difference between like the structure and then the actual solar and solar panels and connection. Awesome that we're on track for that getting it in. How much further, I would assume it's a little further out before like panels and actual where we're online with bringing the solar power through to the terminal?
I mean, I think that's an August 26th.
Oh, wow.
Like
we're still hoping we're on track for that. I mean, we're heavily coordinating with Excel.
That's great.
I mean, electricity is magic to me and I think magic to Colin too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But to some people it's not, and those technical professionals are engaged and they're making sure it's all gonna work. We bought the solar panels last summer, so we have those. But we do need to make sure it all just
significant works. Challenges, I think, as I recall, with connection and the way I had to come like under the terminal for where the tie-in was.
Yeah, so all that boring work is already done.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So they've been boring underground like crazy. I mean, it's, you know, really cramping the style of all the prairie dogs out in the dirt. But I think all the boring work is done.
Okay. Good stuff.
And lots of conduits cheap,
for
and that would be.
Clarification: we're talking about drilling underground, not that it's boring.
No, Lindy's laughing.
I just loved it.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's hilarious.
I was giving you both.
It's both.
No, it's not exciting.
Boring. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, when it comes to the structure, you know, we have the structure, and that is going, you know, smoothly as planned. You know, our team also has control over that piece, right? When it comes to the integration of the solar and getting that power put onto the grid, that's where there's a bunch of work happening right now. It's going well, but it just, you know, there's always unknowns. And so is there a chance that the structure opens in August and the solar doesn't, the installation doesn't finalize until later in the year?
Yeah.
Yes, but right now we still expect that that it's on track to happen all at the same time.
We trust you'll keep us updated.
Yep.
Absolutely. Next up is the air traffic control tower. The pictures aren't as good because it's all night work, so it's all in the dark, but Rebecca's team put together this nice illustration. So this is the work we're accomplishing. This is still on track to be completed in May. Things are going well. Any questions, concerns? Next. And finally, the level two amenity project. There's really two parts to this. The top part is basically everything but the vertical transportation items. So there's a new escalator, there's a update to a service elevator and a new passenger elevator. Those are in orange and are on a separate track that are going to happen later. Everything else, the mother's room, pet relief area.
Yeah, I'll say if you want to give you the lift.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. exit lane, wellness room, family restroom, adult changing. Yeah, all those items are on track to be completed before Thanksgiving. So.
Another reminder, Sarah, will you just circle where the exit is on your diagram? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Will you show where the exit is now, just to orient the board?
Yeah.
So when you're leaving the boarding area, you know, the exit doors are right there. Mm-hmm. We'll be relocating the exit doors to this corridor, and these are automated exit lane systems where doors open and close in front of and behind you, so that a TSA officer doesn't have to sit and watch the exit lane anymore. And so we'll be absorbing the space up here that currently is that storefront where the badging office used to be and things into these amenities for the wellness room, that's that kind of nursing mother's room, and then next to that is the pet relief area.
So creating a larger queuing area, and then you'll have families meet families on the lower level.
Yeah, so I mean, there will not be square footage up there anymore for people to come up to greet passengers. But already we see people waiting downstairs more often now.
And security check is, I see the lines.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh.
It's definitely wild here.
Yeah.
This is the security checkpoint over here in dark gray, kind of behind this overlay.
So the queuing will actually feel similar to what it is now. That piece won't change very much, but there'll be instead of having a stanchion kind of plexiglass wall, it'll be a physical wall that has to separate that secure area from the security checkpoint line, things like that.
Yeah. Currently we have those kind of temporary walls in this area right here. So this is scooting out just a little bit further and will be.
When you look at the queuing, we'll reconfigure the queuing to where you're right, Lindy, that will actually increase the amount of queuing. It doesn't decrease it. And then again, that automated exit lane technology, that is infrastructure that we will just relocate when we open our expansion.
That's all.
Wonderful. Thank you for the in-depth look at all these details. I think it's important that we have board meetings like this so we can all catch up. If there's no other business before the board, may I get a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Thank you all in favor.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Thank you all.
Thank you.
We'll see you back here in May. I know, and we encourage you all to take an escalator ride.
Goodbye.
To a round trip.
Don't go backwards or anything, though, because then we have to close it.